We are talking about a case called Wadenau, and Henrik Totterman is going to take the role of chairman of the board of Wadenau. But before we do that, I would like to introduce Henrik and tell you a little bit about him. Henrik has over 20 years' experience as a serial entrepreneur, but also as a leader in higher education. For the last 8 years, Henrik worked as the dean of the Holt University International School of Business. For those of you who are not familiar with it, it's in Cambridge. It used to be known as the old Arthur D. Little School of Management, and then was acquired by a European company. And they offer a unique and innovative international MBA program. They have campuses in Cambridge, in London, and I think in the Middle East.
Dubai, then we have in Shanghai and San Francisco.
So it's quite extraordinary. Students can go to any campus, they'll get the same courses, get the same degrees. Very bright students. It's kind of funny. Not many people know them because we're in the shadow of MIT and Harvard, so it's hard to differentiate. But Holt is quite unique. But he currently serves as professor of practice, having led Holt University to accreditation, which was a big, big deal. But Henrik also works with corporate clients as president of Lead X3M. And I'm wondering, before you take your role as chairman of the company, if you tell us a little bit about Lead X3M.
Yeah. So I have a background as an entrepreneur, as we heard. I'm actually fifth generation of entrepreneurs in my family. And it was actually my mother in the family who was the entrepreneur. So I kind of grew up with the entrepreneurship in my mother's milk. And then somehow I ended up in academia. I wasn't kind of supposed to be an academic, but my parents were not able to stop me. So I became a PhD and then kind of worked my way in the academic world. And at the same time, over the years, I've always been consulting and advising different companies. I've also been very active in our family business that we sold in 2008. And now when I finished my deanship and turned into a professor of practice, I decided it was time to kind of formalize my consulting and create Lead X3M. It stands for Extreme. X3M is for extreme. And we are based here in Boston, where I live, and we work with advising, quite a lot of strategy advising for mid-sized companies, both here in the States and then, of course, also in Europe. And on top of that, I also mentor individual leaders. Quite a lot of that is actually virtual nowadays. I have a number of leaders in Finland I help actively, and of course also former students. And then I also run training. For example, just very recently I had C-level executives, 30 of them in total from Finland, visiting MIT and Harvard. And then we ran a couple of days of innovation management together with my colleagues in my company. So I have a group of experts, roughly 20, who I work with closely, and we pull together that group for different client needs, and we can tailor and customize it fairly quickly for different kind of purposes. But that's Lead X3M in short.
Yeah. Why don't you take over?
So ladies and gentlemen, I've never seen such a big board, and nevertheless I'm really pleased to see you around here. And before we go into the case, I have to say one thing. When Larry said to me that come to the seat at the table, I liked the name, but I didn't know why it was seat at the table. And now I realize that it's really hard to get a seat around this table. So that's great. But now over to Wadenau. And Wadenau, as you read, is a company that has gone through quite a lot of transformation in the past years. 2008 was its top year. And now suddenly we are in a place where we are trying to transform the company by infusing entrepreneurship as the driver to get people engaged again. 5,500 employees. And we have a mission, we have a new CEO, and we are pushing into new territories, hopefully with the support of the board. It's now 20 past, and we have time till 6 o'clock, as we heard from Larry. Why don't we go straight into business? I think that we don't have any change proposals to the agenda. The first one is approval of minutes, and as you can read from the agenda, last time when we gathered, we had a new CEO coming in. He presented himself, of course, but also his vision for his company. And he had kind of a pretty flying view of where we would like to go. And I think generally we were very pleased with what he was telling us. Nevertheless, we were also a little bit concerned because there was very little documentation provided to us board members. And today, our CEO has provided a document that we read, the two-page kind of memo, and he has given both the kind of background concerns that he has identified when he has been investigating the organization, and he has also kind of bulleted out what the action should be all about. And first of all, can we kind of agree to the first point where we look on the action list that he has kind of put together? Are those seemingly feasible actions based on our last meeting? Any comments, any discussion around this first topic? Do we see that the kind of the roadmap that he has laid out, does it look, resonate as in our last meeting? Any comments?
Is there a new business management system that's been specifically defined, and how does it differ from what's already in place?
Yeah, so there has been an old system, and the company used to have 150 different business units around the world in 45 different countries. We had an outdated system that is now being replaced. The new system is not yet in place, so we are with this roadmap, that's going to be one of the main investments to get those 45 countries to start ticking together again.
I'm familiar with this type of company, having spent a lot of time consulting, and most recently with AECOM Corporation.
Yeah.
You have a business system which is for the, I'll call it the operations management financial of the company, but you also have hundreds and hundreds of projects going. Yeah. Are you putting in a new project management system, or is that part of the business system, yeah, or do they have to merge?
Yeah, so there's definitely a need for also a new project management system, and that's going to be part of the overall investment. And the idea is, of course, that individual consultants will have access to their specific projects, but then the top level is the only one who can access the aggregate and look into different projects and get the details from there. But that's the intention, to build a very sophisticated system, very similar to the ones.
The mind may be your ability to finalize the operating system and integrate it with project management.
That's
it'll bring the company together, or it will drive it further apart.
Yeah, yeah. Any other comments?
When you talk about intrapreneur culture you want to establish, can you tell us a little bit more about what do you want to change from? Is it a matrix system you currently have? What is it?
So this company is 60 years old, and it was founded by an entrepreneur who was very successful in this space of kind of management consulting, especially in pulp and paper, and then later on in energy and in infrastructure. He built the company by acquiring a lot of small entities, but also by founding, based on his relied friends and allies, new country kind of offices step by step. So suddenly they had over 150 different units, and it was a public company, almost like a holding company. And it was very freely structured with P&L kind of reliabilities internally. And now when, after 2008, we have been forced to kind of merge everything together, both legally and also financially, to get some stability into this business. And that has been killing a lot of the old good spirit that we had for almost those 60 years. And now when we look on what we want to do, we want to free a little bit of that global consolidation to get more kind of activities moving in the right direction by bringing the client again to the conversation.
Henrik, based on my experience, I don't see how you as chairman can be the champion, because I've encountered a hell of a lot of resistance, internal resistance from the director, say manager level, who would say, basically stop you in the hall and say, why the hell we need you? You know, we're a strong company without da 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 da, right? So if the chairman can't be, what's your thoughts on who would be champion of these different units?
Yes, yeah, so absolutely you're right. My role here is to represent the message from the CEO, and the CEO is definitely the one who needs to be the role figure who is making this final step in the transformation taking place. And that's why we have Fred Anderson in this place. And Fred Anderson doesn't have his birthday today, but nevertheless he is the one who is going to drive us through this change. And I think we have selected him as a board to this role, and we selected him because he's a team player. He has a long history from this industry. He has been doing this before. He has also been successful in implementing entrepreneurship in the past. And he knows a little bit about our business also from the past years when he first started in this industry. So in that sense, I think we have a champion. But our responsibility is today is to look on his roadmap and agree if that we kind of back it up and move forward with it. Mike.
I'll just express a little skepticism. And I'll just go through kind of a laundry list of points.
Yep.
First of all, I think a culture isn't something that you sit around in a boardroom and develop or create.
Yep.
Something that people think up. The culture is the leadership individuals of the enterprise.
Yeah.
And you have to understand if those are the people that will accomplish what you need, because you're not just going to come in and create a new culture.
Yeah.
Those people are your culture.
Yeah.
And they lead the direction that all the people follow.
Yeah. And as the chairman, I completely agree with your point. I think the important message here is that our responsibility here today is not to try to drive culture. One of the fundamental decision points and discussion points is how do we measure entrepreneurship taking place in the organization. And the reason why it's so important is that there are going to be evident management shifts to make it leaner, but also to ensure that people are accountable and take responsibility.
One of the things that I'd like to measure are, who are we? We're a big company. We're over 5,000 people. But I suspect from the 5 points of concern in the first page,
yep.
That there's been some turnover. So if we ranked our people in terms of the most innovative, creative people and less so, et cetera, who's been staying and who's been leaving, and what's our ability to attract and retain the kind of people that we want to have here?
Yeah, okay. So before we move to talk about the metrics, I think that's where we want to go, all of us.
I'm just going to express a couple other little points.
Yep.
The basic point of innovation, that's another one that I'm a bit skeptical of. People always express a desire for innovation. People don't really like innovation. Innovation is a big threat. People are accustomed to particular ways of doing things, business relationships, et cetera. Innovation and creativity changes all of that stuff. It is one of the primary disruptive forces.
Yeah.
So if you're really going to have it, great. It's a reaction, like a little nuclear reaction, and you have to be sure that your containment vessel is prepared for what you really think you may want to do here.
Yeah. So we have heard Mike's concerns. Any other points about the roadmap in itself? Is the roadmap something that
the proposals here are obviously very macro in their scope, but I think there are a couple of things which came out right off the page to me that have got to get fixed before you can worry about corporate cultures and so on. The statement in here, we know that we have a lot of projects stemming from a former business which are losing money. We don't have all the background for what those are, but there's no way they're going to really be fixed. Some sort of resolution needs to be found for all of that, otherwise it just becomes death by a thousand cuts at best, or just a hole in the bucket. The whole thing just spirals downward.
Yeah.
And then I talk about they've had volume losses relating to higher fixed costs. Well, I don't know what's going on there, but if they got higher fixed costs after they've already gone through 2 or 3 years of massive restructuring, then something has to be identified as to what's going on here.
Yeah.
Because they'll never succeed if they've got higher fixed costs than all their competition.
Yeah.
Well, the net result, until you fix those things, the results won't look better. And guess what? When results look better, morale and the opportunity to create entrepreneurial spirit perhaps becomes possible. But until those things get fixed, I've got a problems with a rosy outlook, regardless of how much I like what the CEO is proposing.
Yeah, so that's a great point. Yeah,
this in this business management system with the complexity of the organization, in multiple countries, multiple business. They just not, I think they probably can't see the problems very clearly. I've seen this happen.
Possible.
Just work off lousy data.
And that was why the proposal has been made to create a management system and also to consolidate the major decision-making into one place, to the headquarters, rather than allowing this P&L-driven kind of loose organization to continue to persist. And I think that the two aspects here is, one is the kind of losses and liabilities from the past. They are being managed out, but they are still part of the P&L. And driving down the profit, and of course also taking some of the attention from the company, so that's kind of something to consider there. And I think part of it is the problem is that they've been shrinking, but they also have a lot of fixed assets in property and so forth that are not utilized to the max. So that's kind of another problem that is going to take time to kind of wash through. But those are definitely items that they are dealing with. Kevin,
I got some trouble that the first 5 points paint a picture of kind of a short-term crisis.
Yep.
I'm troubled with the idea that a new business management system that would centralize things is any kind of a supportive idea of innovation, entrepreneurship,
yep,
and so on, which generally means decentralized experimentation, transparency,
yep,
and so on, not centralizing. So it seems to be a wrong tool for the express desire.
Yeah.
And given both what reads as a short-term crisis for the organization, and between the lines, a culture that may have been anything other than innovative, perhaps more little fiefdoms, do we really speak about metrics and wholesale change of the company to be innovative, or do we speak about a need to carve off something and start some experiments and test tubes that can demonstrate success,
yeah,
and later share the idea,
yeah,
that we'll build a different business system and by metrics dictate innovativeness across an organization with a different history is to me very far-fetched.
Yeah.
I would focus instead on bringing some tolerance for failure, some entrepreneurial experimentation, some,
yeah,
transparency, and building some small successes that could be shared as examples to begin the journey for the company,
yeah,
to a different place.
And that's Kevin is raising a very important point, and I think going back to the management system, an extension of that is going to be an ecosystem for innovation, with the intention that you're going to bring engineers from the global organization together, and then you can co-create content together with the internal stakeholders, and why not also bring in client projects that can be kind of crowdsourced on that platform. So that definitely is something that has not been possible in the past, but if we as a board take a stance on this and allow the new CEO to roll this out, that could be one of the kind of future elements that could be in place.
It feels rigid and as if the design of that would have to be perfect from the start, and it sounds opposite to me of innovation and entrepreneurship, which,
yeah,
is more helter-skelter, more meeting place,
yeah,
more zigs and zags, and less codified in a system or a set of
instruments. The way I understand the CEO would like to roll this out is through frugal competitions internally, with very kind of low barrier to enter, on the opposite of trying to create quality at the start, try to create volume, and then you have different metered kind of stages for getting first of all client involvement and excitement for these projects. If that doesn't exist, then let it roll out, or the opposite, if there is internal interest to invest in them, then let them move forward.
So having actually had to do this, it's kind of interesting to separate out entrepreneurship or entrepreneurship and innovation from operations and an operating model. And I had to do this globally in the past. And so you would think that there would be no connection to culture, but when you put in a business system, especially coming from consulting and having an operating model for consulting, which is an operation system for consulting is different from project management, by the way. This is one of the discoveries I've made. But once you have that, what I found was that leadership across the globe, when they had a common system where they could actually, and somebody else talked about being data driven. So now if you can actually see operating data that empowers you to do things and make decisions, then two things happen. One is that you can actually start getting some commonality across the globe, right? But it also helps, data actually helps you break down cultural barriers.
Yeah.
Because what I found was that we would have fights between our European team, our US team, our Asian team was really small, so it didn't matter. But there would be a lot of fights about things that weren't really consequential in the bigger scheme, right?
Yeah.
But once they had the data, people found ways to cooperate. So that's one comment I would make. I think your point about innovation and entrepreneurship or entrepreneurship is a separate topic altogether. Having an operating model does not necessarily inhibit it, but it doesn't necessarily create it off.
Yeah. And I think you raise a very important point that the CEO has told me personally. The company operates in 45 different countries. We are in US for the moment, which is one of the most outgoing and innovative places when we think about employees and their creativity and how they take risk in their job. When you go to places like Asia, Russia, you're going to see the power hierarchy very differently. And that's going to create some kind of barrier for individuals to enter and engage. And that's actually why this kind of a platform ecosystem for innovation is very helpful, because there you operate confidentially. No one knows who you are. So that gives to these individuals who are scared to be stepping on the toes of their superiors an opportunity to actually engage and give input to the innovation journey.
Is this one product in 45 countries?
So this is a company which is highly specialized in management consulting for industry, engineering, and pulp and paper. And when you think about the employees we talk about, roughly 80% of them have a higher education. They speak typically multiple languages, and that's part of the problem of making a transition in this space. They are very kind of educated and thinking independently, and getting them to do something differently from the past is always creating some challenges.
So would the innovation be new products in each country, let's say, is allowed to develop its own knockoff along that line?
So it's been interesting. We see Brazil, for example, as a good example of a country where they have gone very strongly into food processing industry, and originally just in that region, and now they've been able to expand from that region globally and become a niche player in creating new manufacturing processes, plants, and so forth. In that sense, we can definitely see solutions-driven business emerge. They have not gone into products in the past as an organization. They have not generated any IP, intellectual property either. That has not been their strategy until now, because that frees them to be management consultants for the broad rather than for the narrow. But any final points about the roadmap? I think that it's going to be hard to find consensus here on that today.
Clarification?
Yes, absolutely.
So just want to know, because you're talking about the number of loss-making units and so on, how is transparent today the company out of the 5,500 people that it has? How many of those, or what proportion of those, are aware of who is making money, who is not making money? How far do they share?
I think the CEO would love to answer that question himself. He has been very innovative. He has created a one-page waterfall document that he shares with every single staff member through the top 100 leaders in the organization. And they are supposed to talk about that waterfall chart in their meetings. So every single person in the organization, first time ever, knows exactly who are in the Platinum Club, being the ones who are generating good return on sales. And they also know who are in the bottom end, who are in the red. And so that's very transparent and clear for the first time ever.
I think the roadmap is kind of brilliant. The first point about close alignment with clients, most of the most successful product or service innovation I've ever seen in my career has come through collaboration with clients.
Yeah.
The ideas or the solutions or both, they're right in the client's head.
And on that one, the CEO has taken back a term that was used in the past, project manager is king. That was forgotten here for some years, and now project management is again the one who leads the client relationship.
Right. The second, the whole simplification approach, highly valuable. Get rid of the red tape, get rid of the baggage, allow people to focus their energy in creating and experimenting, whatever. Increasing transparency. As a former risk manager, High transparency is the absolute most reliable risk management process that can exist in any organization.
Yeah.
When people know everything that's going on, bad things don't sneak up on you.
Yeah.
There are a lot of eyes, a lot of involvement. Getting rid of the loss-making units, being willing to cut your losses and have no emotional connection, you know, in the romance of, you know, the 60 years we've been doing that, chop. excellent point. And I am a bit mystified by how they're going to do the fifth one, but I think that one also smells like something that's that has excellence written all over it. But you know, identifying these mega trends and aligning them with prioritized industries, I guess it's going to be a fair challenge in itself.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a brilliant part of the roadmap.
Thank you, Mike. And encouraged by Mike, I'm going to move over to talk a little bit about the metrics behind. And when we think about entrepreneurship, we as a public company, of course, we are measured on a daily basis out there. We also, of course, have classic internal metrics that look into the past performance, and some of them are more current than others. The challenge with entrepreneurship is that we are trying to measure something that is about to happen or is happening currently, but there are no evidence yet that it has taken place. And sometimes, of course, there is evidence of that as well. But let's shift over as a board to think a little bit about what would we like to see from a company if we back up the CEO moving into a high-performance organization that is driven by entrepreneurship. How do we as a board want to see the metrics come to play? How do we know that this entrepreneurship strategy is working, and how is it working or not? Any comments on that?
And I'm just looking at the metrics that are referred to here.
Yep.
Again, you think about a consulting business, among the most common things that you would be looking at would be top line revenue, gross margins, you know, staff utilization. There's no mention of any of that. So those would be just some of the basic things from a global consulting standpoint to look at as a metric, because those are the standard metrics that consulting companies use traditionally in the business. So yeah. I would say those would be some of the starting points to look at.
Yeah. Anyone want to build on that?
Also, you want to look at, given that so many people have left this company and that they've brought in a lot of new people to see how they all can work together collectively, and whether they might attract, that might attract newer people who have some more of this entrepreneurial attitude.
Yeah, that feels so.
That's a challenge that so many people have been let go.
Yeah. You know, it's absolutely kind of the, would you measure the retention or attrition, which would be more important?
It really depends, because some of the people who you might want to retain will not want to work in this new environment.
Yeah.
And that could be a problem. They came because of X, Y, or Z. So I think it's a delicate balance.
Yeah.
For me, we are two basic metrics that we should probably look at, because in the consulting business, there are two things that you have to focus on. First is, are you bringing new business? Because you are always as good as the last project you did, that's it.
So and pipeline driven.
Yep. Talking about pipeline, so we have many ways of looking at that, but it, for example, if I look at 5,500 people, and if every single one of them is taking the time to think about his network and where else could we forward or push forward the message of our value proposition that we have, you have a big machine that can help. So that's a business, acquisition of new business. And the second thing is the customer. When I do the project, are they satisfied? Yeah. Are they happy? And will they recommend us to somebody else? And by the way, hey, that's something we could measure.
Yeah.
Every single one that works on the project, why don't you bring us a referral from your client?
Yeah. Would you go as far as putting performance-based payments, or would that be too extreme?
What we do with it, it could be congratulations, it could be money, that's the idea.
You know, drawing on what Fred was saying.
Well, that's a valid point. I mean, repeat business and consulting.
Yeah.
Those are very valid points. You mentioned about project manager being central, right?
Yeah.
So again, there, consulting firms, if you have project level profitability analysis, a lot of people just don't bother with that, and you discover this after the fact that your projects are not profitable. But if you have a system, again, we talked about the systems, if you have a system that provides you with real time, and in fact, I've been in situations where we've done it on spreadsheets, but you've got to have the right system that lets you not only manage profitability, but also measure, cost to complete or estimates to complete, right?
Yeah.
That's a very important metric because I think the points you made about profitability, if you can't measure estimates to complete in your project have huge cost overruns. By the time you actually consolidate everything, it's too late. You can't do anything. So those are the types of things that from a business system, if you have those types of systems, then people are empowered, you know, at the point where they're actually engaged in projects, and they have the data that helps them. And then the point about that you made, which is a very valid point, if you're actually delivering good service to your customers, then you don't actually have to do as much selling because the customer comes to you and says, I've got these other problems that you can help me with. I personally turned, like, what about, you know, a $25,000 business into a $50 million business over 5 years, just on that one basis. So I think the point you made is an excellent point.
Yeah, so drawing on what what Fred said, you know, one of the metrics, might be, so, you know, and assuming that the profitability is there, but, you know, how is your business growing with existing customers?
Yeah.
Because, this is where sort of like you have opportunity to expand into new spaces and new areas, presumably with the party that is positively inclined toward you.
So I'm reminded of the TEDx talk by Simon Sinek about why most businesses can tell what they do and how they do it. And I guess if you ask 100 leaders in your company, they could tell you what they do and how they do it. And we've been talking a lot about cognitive stuff, you know, measuring, and if you're not meeting your goals, which sounds very penal. And I wondered if longer term, if you got your 100 leaders together and they sort of felt like they were able to create a why of their business. So if they get emotionally attached to a why of the business, they might be far more empowered to really sort of drive through and create better results. So it's just
and that's a great, great point. And there is this plan of creating a global meeting where the top 100 individuals come together.
Right.
And when you look on the mega trends that were mentioned here earlier, some of them are related to pollution and of course sustainability of environmental aspects, but also other aspects in society. So I think that there are great kind of value drivers for emotional leadership and people coming together to solve bigger problems than just what they are paid for. They are actually societal problems that needs to be solved one way or the other.
These are all human beings, and they need a North Star to sort of point themselves to. And, I'm facilitating a management meeting next week in Houston, which the first part of the meeting is going to be talking about the core principles. Do we believe in our core principles?
Yeah.
Which sort of trump cards all this other stuff, you know what I mean?
It sounds like the company's sales, you said volume, I took that as sales. The sales have been declining and they're hitting a spot. I think part of the new performance metrics, I definitely put one in for sales, or what we used to call bookings. You know, you book the project, you put it in your backlog. The idea of giving people multiple credit for those wins and then broadcasting that, I think would be very important. Of course, you know, you can't. It's okay to double count when you're in that stage of the work. So you and I collaborate, we both get a 100% credit for winning $200,000 project, and you publicize that.
Yeah.
It shifts to a new mode when the project is booked. It's going to get executed, but then you start looking at that and how that gross project margin can get officially assigned or unofficially assigned. But you can track all of that.
Yeah. And when you look on the different levels in the organization, do you see any difference between the C level, then perhaps division heads or unit heads, and then of course also the project managers? And why not when we talk about individuals, engineers working in these projects? Do you see a significant difference there, how we want to measure how they contribute to entrepreneurship? Because they all have different kind of approaches to it, and some of them are very far away from the client. A lot of the metrics we have been talking about now is, of course, I think, very valuable about retention and attrition, about kind of the HR perspective. But beyond that, we've been talking quite a lot about the client and how we drive sales, and that's, of course, evidently and a very important aspect. But you also have individuals who are not directly related to sales. They, of course, contribute to sales, but indirectly. How do we want to measure their entrepreneurial activities? Have you thought about that?
There's a very interesting research done by the chairman of the finance department at Northeastern University. And if any of you would like a copy of the research, I could just give me your cards and I'll be glad to give it to you. They looked at innovation in corporations. They looked at 275 public companies between a 10-year period. And they looked at some measures of innovation on one hand, and then they looked at a very simple thing. The number of how dense was the CEO's network. And what they found was a direct positive statistical correlation between how well connected a CEO is and how innovative a company is. When you think about it, it makes perfect sense. If you have somebody who has lots of networks, is very involved on many boards, they get ideas from all sorts of places outside the company. And because they're so well networked, if it blows up and they get fired, they know they got a network to fall on. The other side is a CEO doesn't join any other boards, doesn't get any other ideas outside the company. He's so concerned about surviving, he's going to hang on to things. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. So if any of you would like a copy of this research, they're psychologists have something called the Big Five personality factors. And the two that are relevant here, one is called conscientiousness. I've never met a business that doesn't want to hire conscientious people. And in a consulting firm, you have to be uber conscientious. But the second is open to new ideas. And we've all met people in companies and they drive us crazy. They're extraordinarily conscientious and they're not very open to new ideas. So if I was going to advise this company, I would say hire somebody like Susan to recruit people, and then ask a series of open-ended questions. Tell me about something you've done that's innovative, new idea. How did you do it? Why did you do it? And then when you check references, ask references. Give me an example of this person coming up with new ideas, being open to new ideas, taking initiative. And if you get a picture of somebody who's very conscientious, but not very open to new ideas, don't hire them.
Well, I'll just repeat what I said earlier. So there, new ideas and innovation are extremely destructive. That's what disruptors are all about, if you think about what we've been witnessing in the last 6 or 10 years. And a big part of it is cannibalizing existing products, businesses, people's units that are in that enterprise. So it very much is, you know, taking the genie out of the bottle and then standing back, because that individual who you may want to hire may have great potential for being an innovator. Maybe hasn't been in the right place. And there aren't a lot of right places. I'm just reminded of a generation ago when 3M used to have its skunkworks, and they formally determined what the life cycle for products should be and what the revenue mix should be over time, you know, from recent innovations versus traditional businesses. And I haven't really followed the company in recent years. I don't know if they've been able to maintain that process, but you know, that's like another nuclear reaction in your hands to, you know, to have a 5-year lifespan for Post-it notes, for instance.
Yep.
I respectfully disagree with you. I'm coming from a different place, and it's probably because of my own different experiences than the ones you've had, because I spent my entire career in technology companies, wide variety of technology companies. Disruption, new ideas, that was the name of the game. If you didn't have new ideas and new thoughts in different ways, you were like the bottom 10% and out. So, you know, the environments were very conducive encouraging. I mean, a lot of the things that Larry was talking about, if you wanted those people, and so you had teams of people. You're right. I mean, you could argue it was disruptive, but it was. But when it's channeled in the right way, it is hugely empowering. And some of the best results I ever saw was when you had environments that encouraged that kind of innovation, whether you call it disruption or not, but new ideas always coming out. And they weren't always accepted, they weren't always implemented, they were vetted, which some people didn't like, but you know, so you had to have some system to be able to decide what sort of made the hurdle or didn't. But the encouragement, the ideas, and getting them out, thinking about things differently, I mean, it's hugely empowering.
Yeah. And it's there's a lot of problem solving taking place, a lot of creativity in these tech engineering environments. And I think the only challenge there is the way they are measured in terms. Yeah, exactly. And also the kind of, how do you measure effectiveness? It's often work is done in hours, and you are so excited about the project that you work in that the kind of the balance between outcomes and the actual working harder.
Eric, let me impose a
okay.
5 minutes before 6 o'clock.
So there was Mike who had a...
I just wanted to sort of split the difference between both of you there. And I think that, you know, if there's a company where that's been part of the culture, then I think it's more accepted. When you're injecting this new system into an old school company, then it can become more problematic. I think how you deal with that is you clearly define what being an entrepreneur is, and it doesn't mean that you put aside your task and you come in and say, today I'm going to come up with new things that I'm not going to do.
Right.
So clearly defining it, I think, is one way that you overcome some of those challenges.
Yeah, what are expected from you?
I think the two sides of the coin, though, Ellen, are that you can think of a business in terms of the products and the innovation activity. Another way of thinking of a business is, and many people have said, a business is a set of clients. And if you are not resonating with that set of clients that your business is based on, you may be walking on a rather short plank.
May I propose that we continue with this conversation when we have the kind of formal part over, and we give Mike the final word because he was asking for it, and then we wrap up, and then we continue in the informal coffee discussion afterwards. Pardon me, Ellen. Pardon me, Mike.
I wanted to throw this in. I've been looking at this, and I'm looking at all of these changes to the culture and all this, and the thing that keeps going through my head is, partially because of my experience, inheriting a company that was broken. And I took this company over, and I'm looking at all these things that are broken. There was just so much in the air, my head was swelling.
Yeah.
And I just stopped and said, we need to do a SWOT analysis, because when I read this first section about the history and all this, I'm looking at this one, does this company know where it is right now? It was somewhere in a good place.
Yeah.
Something happened, and is it really the financial climate that caused this, or is there something else broken? So for me, before I put a system in that's going to fix a problem, I want to make sure I know what the problem is.
Yep.
So a SWOT analysis, internal and external,
yep.
Evaluate it, then put the plan together. I think it's the cart before the horse.
Yep. And the moment when this memo was fictively written is the moment when the CEO has been in the house for a few months. Mm-hmm. And he was told when he was recruited that we actually have come through the worst of it. And now we just need to get the good metrics in place and start performing as a high performance organization again. And the reality was that kind of was.
So we're at the end of our session. I've got a question. Is this a real company?
This is a real company. And so I've actually marketed a little bit on the back here. That's why it's a little bit hard for me, because I know so much about the company, and I'm trying to run a fictive case with you.
And
so I go quickly back to the real case, but it's coming actually out this summer. So it's a case, and I don't know if you want to hear how they have solved it.
Yeah, because this case is written, I think, 2016, right?
Yes, yeah, so it's a...
Where is it today, in 2019?
Yeah. So the kind of, when we look on the metrics, very simple metrics were put in place. The CEO, Martin Aporta of Pöyry PLC, which is a Finnish global company, he actually, in 2016, in the summer, went in front of his C-level. There were 11 in the executive team at that time. And he said to them, look on our stock market kind of... valuation. Look on our company where we are for the moment. Who of you would like to put your own money into stock? And out of 11 persons, only 3 hands went up. And the rest were actually, they dissolved pretty quickly. And then he slimmed down the organization quite heavily and built kind of a much leaner 5-person C-level organization. But that was kind of one of the things they did. And each and every one of those C-level employees, they put actually, or executives, they put their own money and invested into this stock. He himself personally, just to show that he takes ownership, he put 1 million euros of his own money into the stock and kind of had a stake in the game. And that was kind of the, one of the mantras. The other thing that they did was they created a 10-point program that had all of these issues that you were raising were very clearly defined. How do we solve these? And that 10-point program has been there ever since 2016 all the way to 2019. And that's the kind of mantra that they have with the organization, going always back to the, we need to kind of fix these things to become a high-performance organization, and all the kind of expectations, but also deliverables related to that. So when you have a 360 performance review, it always goes back to the elements of the 10-point structure. Another element which goes back to the attrition and retention point, staff, of course, were they were proud to be part of this organization, and they were devastated by its bad reputation and the bad financials. One thing that they felt generally across the organization was that they were not giving clear expectations by their management. And the reason was that the previous CEOs had been giving these kind of catastrophe quick strategy fixes on an ongoing basis. So the company was kind of moving from one crisis to the next. And that's why kind of the new CEO came in and said that, let's stop this. Let's put in place a 10-point structure, and we will follow that all the way through. I would say that the culture got gradually let's not call it fixed, but it improved and it became healthier. The challenge was that the outside world didn't really see this change. So even though the organization now today has done 10 consecutive quarters of improvement, and last year their performance went up 67% compared to last year, nevertheless, the stock market has not kind of shown their appreciation for this turnover. And that resulted in the fact that the major equity owners in this company sold their stock to a competitor from Sweden. So now you have ÅF and Pöyry, which are one. So rather than having a 5,500-person organization and a separate 8,000, now you have organization in the Nordic sphere that operates in 45 different countries, as Pöyry has been doing for these years. A really fascinating case, and I grew up with the case. And my grandmother, who was very entrepreneurial, she once took me for a walk when I was 5 or 6, and we walked past the Jaakko Pöyry, who is the founder of the company's house, and she said, that's a man I really respect because he took Finland out on the global market when it comes to management consulting. And I will never forget those words because it was like, wow, grandmother thinks this gentleman has done something fascinating. And so ever since then, I've been kind of craving for this company, trying to understand it better. And then I was given the opportunity last September to write the case together with the CEO and their head of communications. And that's kind of what this Wadenau company, the fictive company, is building on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And thank you. You have been a fantastic board. And
up to 10 points.
Please
incorporate the 5 of the roadmap.
Let me have a look. I can actually see the case.
Please join us next month. We're actually going to be continuing this theme. It's going to be a case of a much smaller company that has been dedicated to the idea of selling machines, pricing machines, and servicing machines. And then all of a sudden, the competitors are moving to subscription models, and the company's kind of wedded to, its origins about selling stuff, not subscriptions. How do you change? So it's really a continuation of this issue about innovation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. If you want to continue to have this discussion, feel free to discuss. Those of you who want to leave, feel free to leave.
Please, let's share a cake.
All right. Thank you very much.
I think we need to sing to Fred. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Fred. Happy birthday to you.
Grab the knives and forks from back there.